right, we will call the St. Paul City Council Org Committee meeting to order. We're all flying in from different parts of the city this morning, and excited to have these conversations, so thanks for being here. Today on our agenda, we will be discussing the Planning and Economic Development Department's update on cultural destinations. And again, for people just tuning in, our org committee meetings are partnered with updates on programs that were launched with last year's budget. And just curious of how progress is moving, how dollars are going out the door, how the plan is fleshing out, because a lot of things were ideas at the time that we put them in the budget. So this is an opportunity to just check in and see how things are going. After we hear from Dr. Corey, we will talk. Ms. Houston, our chief budget officer, will talk about our 2020 City Council budget planning, get a kind of lay of the land of what our budget looks like going forward as we go into our favorite season, budget season, and then our standard update on committees, boards, and commissions so that we all know what's going on in the places where we represent the council. So with that, I will turn things over to Dr. Corey and welcome you. Good morning.
Good morning, council members, and thank you for this opportunity to present to you the ideas on the progress of the St. Paul Cultural Destination Areas. I want to acknowledge today the team from PD here that's present, who are all working very enthusiastically to implement the vision. And as you mentioned, this idea was a new idea. And as a community member mentioned, from their perspective, it was design build. And when we come into the walls of this city, it becomes design bid build. And so there is a transition between these two areas, and some of those dynamics I would explore and talk with you about. This morning, you made an excellent presentation to the Business Review Council, and there were two points I want to tie in that fits rightly in it. You talked about this climate in this country of polarization, of rhetoric and words. And one reason I accepted this job was to explore, is it possible to focus on wealth building at the neighborhood level and offer a model that is empowering to people in those neighborhoods and would offer an alternative model for economic development for the city? And what I'm offering you today is a progress report on 18 months of work, not only on this model, but all the regular things that the city does, which this fit in as a priority of mine. And as you know, the Department of Planning and Economic Development has planning, housing, economic development, and administration. And so in the midst of this entire range of activities, we have achieved some spectacular progress here in terms of this model. The second key point to make is that this model is very much like what Uber did to the world of entrepreneurship. It converted an individual with their own assets into entrepreneurs. This model focuses on the assets of people in low-income neighborhoods, diverse communities, and focused on their assets and empowering them to take those assets in a model of economic self-empowerment. And so that's very unique in a historical context of this country, because very often the values and cultures of these diverse neighborhoods were not celebrated as much as other cultures. And by just affirming that, it unleashes an enormous amount of energy for creativity, for innovation, and for progress. Just yesterday, I got a call from a community member and said, hey, I got this great idea of what I'm going to do in the street. And we were ready for him. We know how to channel that idea into a very concrete action. But that's the goal of this process. So let me run through the model and explain. It's not, it is fitting that the vision behind the model is also Mayor Carter, a son of Rondo, who often talks about the power of this economic engine, these assets that we find in the neighborhoods, whether it's food, culture, music, art, and how could it be effectively emerge in this global city that St. Paul is emerging into. So what is a cultural destination area? This is a place that offers vibrancy, engaging, an engaging environment for community development, a space, a destination where someone could experience a whole range of new and very exciting and very rewarding experiences, but at the same time, build wealth. So in order to engage in this strategy on a citywide level, we had to start somewhere. And so we began with four models that have some integration into city plans and processes in the past and visible in the community, and some emerging ones. So the seven that you have listed out here, Little Africa, Little Mekong, Rondo, District El Sol, if you look into city plans and documents, you'll find references of that there. But, and the other ones are emerging areas which have a lot of different concepts emerging. And so how could we channelize the energy of the east side? How could we channelize the energy of the north end? How do we channelize the energy on the west seven, Devern, which is a very engaging and a new community out there? So that was the framework. And if you look on the map of the city, you could see the where these areas are located are also in the heart of these diverse but also low-income communities, and that's where we hope to unleash this energy.
And Dr. Corey, just I want to pause just for one second and to share with my colleagues that this map that Dr. Corey has used in this slide is complete. It's fascinating to me, using the dots to show where different communities have clustered in the city. I asked for a version of this map with a bullet or the little graphics removed, and I have copies of that. If anyone's interested, those are available. And I just think it's really, for me, it helps me understand some of the challenges, particularly for me in the North End, which where you can see certain cultural groups in different areas. That is one part of the city where it's very, very, it's a real mixed bag, and it's hard to figure out what that true identity is. So for me, it was very eye-opening. I have that map without the icons if people are interested to follow up. I just think it's amazing, yeah. And I think that was a Bob Spalding creation, so credit to Bob.
We got a great team in our GIS and mapping and research that produced some outstanding work. But you're right. When you look at this map, you'll see the power of the idea. Can we harness that energy to transform the city and make it a global city? That was for the first game of Minnesota United with Germany. So you can see already the global influence coming into the city and how can we channelize that effectively and find them opportunities to grow. So there are three elements that make up a cultural destination area. And these core elements are vibrancy. You've got to experience the energy of the area. You've got to have creative placemaking, a sense of people coming together around the destination. And then what distinguishes this model from pure creative placemaking that you find quite often is integrating a wealth creation component. How do we actually connect this energy to grow jobs and business development in the area? So these three elements make up the CDA. Vibrancy, as I mentioned, you could see in this building when you go into the Little Africa area, the murals that welcome you as you turn on Snelling. You can see places of opportunities for placemaking, whether if you've been in the Little Mekong Night Market, or if you've been on Rondo Day, or if you've been on Little Africa Fest. You see people coming together and celebrating and the vibrancy of culture that occurs in that energy. And then one of the very interesting experiences I had, because one day in one of my Little Africa Fest was going on, I went across the street to Snelling Cafe, and I was talking to the owner. He said, "Hey, what's going on out there? Because a lot of people are coming here and buying stuff." So we were doing a survey, and we were paying them money to do the survey, and they were going right across the street and spending it in his restaurant. So that's what we hope would. And finally, wealth building. Can we connect the people? Our measure of success is, can it work for the neighborhood? Can it work for the people that are part of it to have economic development? And so in this course of this conversation with the community group, we try to answer the question, what role does the city play in this idea? And what we've identified as the role that the city play is to create the what we call the platform. The platform is called cultural destination areas. And there are elements of this platform that could be marketing, that could be resources, that could be space, there could be events, there could be logistics. So what do I mean by each one of these things? Example, the food truck in Allianz Field is we created a space for that to occur. Events, if there's a festival and the city is sponsoring or an event in a or an event that might happen, like a little Mekong night market. Logistical support, a lot of the organizations that we work with are strapped because they are small and they have limited capacity. Can we offer logistics support to help coordinate meetings, to help get people together, to help engage people? And I want to introduce some of our team later that would talk about how we are addressing that issue. Marketing, can we bring visibility to the issue? Like the call I got last night, and said, hey, we can elevate what you're doing so that people know what you want to achieve in that block of the street. And then how could we bring the resources of the city, whether it's a loan or grant program or a zoning to make to be effective? So any organization in the city who has this concept can then use this platform to grow and innovate the idea. So the city's role is to provide and build this platform with institutional partners. The organizations can come and create their concepts on this platform. So what have we achieved update? So these are pages from Visit St. Paul, and I've been around the block this past decade or 15 years asking for things like this. Can we be integrated into the from the outside? And it took the leadership of Mayor Carter, this council, PD director, the team, to have this in such a visible way integrated into the city. So now when you look at the latest visitor's guide and you open the pages, you'll find integrated into this mosaic of St. Paul these vibrant destinations. And then when you open the map, the next page, and you see a map of the city integrated into this mosaic of destinations, people would say, so people would look and say, hey, now what's this Little Mekong or what's this Rondo? Let's go and check it out. And when they go to check it out, there'll be this experience that will engage with them and will help them, again, bring economic vitality to those areas. And then this partnership with Visit St. Paul, they have a page on their webpage, if you go, it's called St. Paul Deals. And so we have an arrangement with them where we can upload businesses from these destination areas, the deals that they offer. So if you go up to the website now, you can find deals from Little Mekong, deals from Rondo, and we're keeping on building these deals so that someone passing by with the app, this would emerge as a special. And now we're giving these business owners a platform. Because, again, this morning in the Business Review Council, people are asking, so well, what about small businesses? How are we outreaching? Here is a way, a practical way of how we are connecting and integrating them into the... And then in the calendar of festivals, as you go through these pages, you'll see in every month we've integrated this wide range of festivals that are coming up in the summer. The city of festivals as recently in the paper, it was there was an article that talked about every day, what could you do in the city of St. Paul and the events that are happening, so we're integrating this into it. So, and then finally, we are also engaging in actual economic development activity around the food truck. And so here you find an example of how we created a space in Allianz Field for a food truck from the cultural destination areas. And on the first day of this, we went with the team to identify who was going to serve on that first opening day, because we wanted to make sure we had a good quality product. So the previous day, we visited the truck, we sampled the food, We looked in what they were, and they were ready to serve because they already had some experience in multiple stadiums. And so day one, they did very well. But when I walked across the street to Little Africa, to this lady that you see on that picture, her restaurant was empty. So somehow the traffic was not flowing across the street. And so the question was, can we make it work for micro businesses? How could we do it? And our team, credit to our team, talked to the truck owner, talked to the entrepreneur with the partner, AEDS. In 2 days' time, she was on that truck. You can see her menu item below that, so it was now added. She was selling Sabrina's Rolls. If you haven't heard it, Amy, you better go try it out. She can be a millionaire because it's a very good chapati roll she makes. And to test it, I invited Craig Cohn from Keg & Case, said, come check this out. He's been going there ever since, and he's been saying, hey, I want you to come into Keg & Case because I think you'll sell it well, and I think you'll make more money out of it. But here's an example of what I meant to say is we have, in this model, we've got to make it work for the neighborhood. How could we create a space not only for this initiative, but also bring in the community to make it work?
Mr. Coy, 1 second. Mr. Tolbert has a question.
Just because it's up, I've seen this truck on social media and at the stadium. Does the city own the truck?
Okay, let me explain a little bit about it. So, again, going back to this concept of a platform, that we create a platform and let the community engage with it. So what we did, I had initially reached out to Dr. McGuire and asked him how could we make it the stadium work for the community. And he came up with this idea. He said, you know, what if I created a space among the food truck area for the cultural destination areas and for the community to work with it? I think it'll be very effective because after that, the food truck can still be actively used in neighborhoods. So out of that came out this model about a food truck that would be placed in the stadium, but on games that on days that are not game days, it could be displaying and engaging with the foods of the neighborhoods. So currently there's no truck that is owned. We're using, because of the time speed of the game coming up, we're using trucks that are connected with the destination areas. In the future, the collaborative hopes to own a truck that we would partner with them in helping to make it happen. So what we have done to answer your question is we broker the relationship between the stadium and the cultural destination areas, and the cultural destination areas developing the programming around the food truck, the purchase of a food truck, and how it will be operated in the future.
So are you saying that this picture we're looking at is like K-Town?
Yes.
It's almost like Sabrina's is in K-Town's truck.
Yeah.
Like a hermit crab or something.
And K-Town has its own truck, right?
Okay.
That the cultural destination areas allowed it to use under space. And what we did was add on some more into their menu items to bring it in. So for the initial this year, there'll be rotation of different trucks connected to the destination areas. Hopefully by the end of the year, there will be a truck purchased by the collaborative and managed by the collaborative, and that would spin out in its own way.
So the city's not buying food trucks, right?
Not here, not at that time.
Ms. Nacker.
But just to follow up on that, are you saying that the collaborative might buy a food truck, which would come out of city dollars?
The funding of the food truck right now is an open question because we could find resources through certain funding pools, but they all have restrictions. So what could be an appropriate source for funding of that food truck is a question that we will address in the next phase. But the intent is we are illustrating through this model the effectiveness of the food truck, and then when we go to the next stage about purchasing a food truck, and the collaborative is ready for that, there is going to be a request to the city. What's the nature of the partnership, and how can the city engage in this effort?
But that would be an example of something that could qualify for a Cultural Star loan. for something, for example?
It could. There's a wide range of sources, and so we first will, this process of community input will define the model clearly, and that will identify the sources and users of funds.
Ms. Nelson?
Thanks for explaining all this. I represent the area that the stadium kind of opens up on, or one of them, and seeing the food trucks out there helps me feel just glad that there's something that the neighborhood can do, if, even if you don't have tickets. Like, I think it's important for the stadium to feel like a community event, even if you're not, like, in the stadium. And so I love the idea of, like, bringing the diversity of St. Paul kind of, like, to the stadium doorstep, and the neighborhood can experience it. The thing that I would like to maybe understand better is who is, like, the street team that is kind of facilitating these connections. And I know, Dr. Corey, that you have all these relationships in general and that you've facilitated a lot of them, but it feels like, from a resource standpoint, that we're in this phase where, like, we're building connections that didn't necessarily maybe all the way exist, or we're helping kind of, like, stitch resources together better. There's someone out there that notices, oh, this person's not benefiting from the natural flow of, like, foot traffic. What can we do? And that just takes, like, people on the ground. And so I guess, is there, like, conversation about how to sustain that? You know, I think that your relationships are an asset, and also you leading an entire department is is plenty on your plate, in addition to being out and, like, using your relationships that matter. So how are you thinking about building, like, a smaller team of folks that can sustain this work and have cultural responsiveness and sort of, like, carry the relationships? And as we build out these spots, I think there will just be, like, new sets of needs that emerge, and it's worth talking about now what you think some of those might be. Does that make sense?
It's a great question, and I have details as we move down the slides that would address that. But I want to ask the question back to Councilmember Naker and Councilmember Tolbert. Is there any concern about a request coming from the community for the city engagement with food truck? I mean, I'm trying to understand your question, too.
Well, for myself, I would just say I want to make sure we're using very limited CDA dollars effectively, and it seems like, I think, a little bit to maybe Councilmember Nelson's point, there are so many resources in the community, there are so many food trucks already from our cultural destination areas, that the actual ownership of an asset is, I don't know what value that would add. So I would be scrutinizing that, I guess.
Okay, thank you.
I would agree with that, that the city purchasing food trucks, I mean, if we do, then we get into, are we going to do an RFP process, or we are choosing fairly, and people are competing and paying their workers fair wages. It opens up a Pandora's box when the city starts owning businesses. Yes.
And as I mentioned earlier, this process is design-build, and when it reaches the city, it's design-bid-build. And to address your point, there is some more dynamics that we have to be aware of, but I appreciate that insight.
Yeah. And to connect that to my question/point, my observation was just the existing resources from the community were there on game day. Staff from PED noticed gaps, helped people connect better. That's a really, to me, a good use of our time and capacity as we kind of nurture this new initiative into being. And it's okay if you don't have answers right now. I'm just already thinking down the road to how do we, like, staff that better going forward, because it seems like a chance to hire our community to help connect our community more. Just thinking about how we do that organizing. It's interesting to me.
Thank you, Councilmember Nelson. I'll address that issue, too. Just by way of the question that you raised about the stadium, on a lot of people were concerned as the stadium opened out for the first game, what would happen to businesses and would the business be connected? And I want to credit my team that went door knocking, connecting people to resources, planning director and Luis Pereira and his team, and Tony Johnson looked at zoning, licensing, all the different dimensions of it, such that some of these businesses have entered into a partnership with Visit St. Paul to gain a lot more visibility. So we did a very strong boots on the ground approach to make that happen. So let me continue to address some of the questions that you have. First of all, some of the sectors that have emerged as possible ways to build up this vision would be food and the many connections around food. And in this area, and then there'll be art, an artist and how to develop a roster of artists that could be connected to the opportunities, and then gifts and retail. How could we build up a network of resources that could take advantages of a pop-up retail or opportunities around that? And in the area of food, the brokering of a relationship with Allianz Field, and we are now engaging with Keg & Case as an opportunity to feature the cultural destination areas in the number one new food hall in America. And so these are areas that we're going to be paying more attention as we move forward. And then finally, the element that's very critical that makes this model quite unique is how cultural destination areas have been integrated into all that we are doing in PED, whether it's a housing trust fund program, and you recently approved a community land trust, whether it is our Neighborhood Star and Cultural Star program, whether it's our rental rehab program. How are we intentionally connecting the people around those areas to these resources that the city can have to offer, including our comprehensive plan that sets the basis for the next two decades? We have integrated the cultural destination areas around these concepts of neighborhood nodes and transit-oriented development. And so we are setting up a system where the entire economic development strategy of the city is also serving to strengthen the base around these areas of great need and less resources. So coming now to the questions about capacity and how are we going to be dealing with it, we have three levels of partnerships. First is the City of St. Paul team. Then we have the partners in the collaborative, and we have institutional partners, and all of these elements will expand. So I'd like to introduce some of the members of the team who are here. We have Tony Johnson, who brings the skills of a planner and community connectedness to the table, leading the initiative to address the critical logistic needs and coordinating needs. We just recruited Kozar Muhammad, who will be this year helping to put these pieces together, but also being a resource to the community as they want to convene meetings, because there's a lot of social capital that needs to be built in order for this to be effective. We have Wang Tao, who has expertise in food-related businesses as well as small business development. Austria coming with a background in cultural star, and some of our housing team members, Zhang Wang and Jules, that are working in homeownership and rental, and Andy Hesnes, looking at the landscape of real estate development in the downtown area, Nora and Michelle, who are in the Cultural Star, Neighborhood Star, how could we effectively tap those resources, and the core leadership team. The role of the CD...
Ms. Prince.
I just want to observe here that it's so great to have staff people who are bilingual, because I've had some meetings with local businesses where it just made such a huge difference to be able to add that component to our interaction. So congratulations on the staff that we've been able to recruit for this.
Thank you for that, Councilmember Prince. I think it's a very important part of the entry point of an ordinary person into the city's resources. Very often, people in that universe do not think the city is for them. And by having the facility of language, of cultural intelligence, of connections, of people actually knowing them and saying, hey, I know you, can make a big difference in how effective we are. So,
one moment, Mr. Tao.
Thank you. Dr. Corey, I've had experience working with some of your staff here on this team. And they've always provided quality customer service within our office. And so I want to say that I have solid confidence in this team, and that if they could continue to provide quality customer service and getting the words out there. And I think any sort of initiative at this scale takes a lot of commitment and passion. And I encourage the team to continue to drive that home, to continue to work with the community and know that they may not see the result immediately, but this sort of work, you will definitely see impact in the cultural destination. So,
thank you, Councilmember Stau. I agree with you. We got an excellent staff, a bilingual staff, a very engaged boots on the ground staff. I've seen it in them actually sitting down multiple times with a small business owner to fill up an application form or to maneuver licensing and zoning system, and I think they're a great asset to the city, and I'm proud to be part of that team. So in the course of trying to define this pilot, we began with a group of people and of organizations who have some experience doing at least all of it or some elements of it, and these groups are not written in stone. We are going to be moving out into the community and talking about it, and more people, like the call I got yesterday, would be interested in being part of it. So in the areas that we were looking at, we identified some initial contacts of people who are helping us think through the model. And so on this list, you have on each of the areas, a historic Rondo, Little Africa, Little Mekong, East Side, District del Sol, North End, Shepherd. Some initial group of people have been meeting and now formed into subcommittees, whether it's the food truck or the downtown or organizational development, to build the structure and build the social capital that would work from the outside. Because as you rightly say, the city can play a limited role. And for this to work, the energy and the autonomy and the movement has to come from the community, and we are setting in a building, helping build that social capital in the community.
And I said this when we met, and so I want to say it out loud in front of my colleagues as well, but I think when you look at this list, you can see that the CDA Collaborative has a stronger base of partners in particular parts of the city. I know, speaking specifically for the North End, that In Progress is a wonderful, amazing organization, but it's small, and it's really a group that works with artists in progress, so young folks, and really led by one person. And so In Progress and others means one person. And I want to, one amazing human being who I can't even believe, you know, doesn't have her own wings. But I want to make sure that I often notice that it's easiest to invest in areas where the infrastructure exists and count those as wins, and then have others listed for other areas that really need the investment. And I want to push us to work extra hard in the areas where we don't have the infrastructure and let the infrastructure do its thing in the places where it exists. I think it's really important that we remember that it's time to shift the focus to the areas that are really struggling with the lack of CDCs, nonprofit groups, and other nonprofits that are pushing this work forward. And we have talked about it. I just continue to be concerned about some of the areas that are just, they're hard to reach for that reason. Ms. Prince?
Yeah, and I think to that point, you know, when I look at the East Side as a third of the city kind of represented as the East Side, I'm aware that, you know, and this is something I need to keep, now that I'm on the Visit St. Paul board, I need to drill down in their materials about just how multifaceted the third of the city is that is the East Side. What I do want to say that is really gratifying and at the same time something we really need to listen to on the East 7th Street work that's being done, which is really exciting. We're now hearing from, you know, if you look at that map, the East Side is door-to-door, very multicultural. And so I'm hearing, I got a call one day from a member of the Liberian community saying, hey, wait a minute, it can't just be Latino organizations on 7th Street. And then I heard from somebody from the Nigerian community, and we also are considered the East Side. Many Hmong people, as I understand it, consider the East Side to be the Hmong homeland in America. So I think one thing we have to be aware of is where that infrastructure is. It might be the loudest voices, but we want to be able to get at that true multiculturalism that exists in these parts of town. And then I also want to thank you, Dr. Corey, for recognizing that that strip mall in really important cultural center in my ward at McKnight and Lower Afton with the very improbable name of Shamrock Plaza is a it's a really important gathering spot for our East African communities. And so I'm very excited that you brought that idea forward and we're going to be reaching out in that community. So I think the opportunities here are tremendous, and I think it's a good problem to have that more of our immigrant communities and you know, that it breaks down into more people wanting to be involved than fewer. So thanks for this work.
Thank you, Councilmember President. Council President Bredmoen, you raised a very, Councilmember President Bredmoen, you raised a very important question about capacity and how to build capacity. And that's going to be a challenge and an opportunity because we are, I'm aware of the resources that that in the North End and in progress and how can we begin this process of building that capacity and partly bringing COSAR in is this opportunity to begin that process of building. And some of it the city is going to be able to do, some of it is going to be working with partners and getting foundation support and but without that it's not going to work out. And I want to thank Council Member Prince for talking about the diversity on the east side, and I've gone through many of these areas, and it could, there's a lot of energy that's emerging out there, and it could all be offering this platform that could be well utilized there.
Great.
So in addition to that, we need other kinds of partners to help build the destination areas, the platform, and some of the people that we have initially reached out to as part of this process were the Creative Enterprise Zone. Very interesting. They're going to launch their mural project soon. Mm-hmm. And part of that is there's going to be a Little Mekong Night in the Creative Enterprise Zone. So Junior Achievement is a center for youth entrepreneurship right in the heart of the city. They're very interested in partnering with the cultural destination areas around our youth because they're accessible via public transportation. LISC has always been a strong partner. The Neighborhood Development Center, St. Paul Almanac has a function around literary skills, which again has to be developed. Springboard for the Arts, which is emerging as this national treasure on University Avenue, and as they expand, they hope to have on their back area where's a garage, a market. And in that market, featuring the markets of the cultural destination areas. Public Arts St. Paul, right in our backyard, and Visit St. Paul are some of the institutional partners that have been working with us to try to build this model. So transitioning now to the budget and how we propose to use the budget allocated in the last budget cycle. The food initiative in the food truck and in the cultural destination areas, these are, ADA has a lot of experience in the food sector, and the collaborative chose ADA to be the lead organization in making this incentive work. And in order to say, for example, to have a food truck in Alliance Field, just insurance costs $5,000. And then there has to be, as you mentioned, Council Member Nelson, about how do you connect people to the opportunities. You need a coordinator. You need someone on the ground. How do you actually recruit vendors to be in that? So there's capacity that needs to be built in that sphere to make these functions work effectively. And we propose $45,000 be used to help build up that food retail capacity, food capacity what would happen in the food truck area in Kegan Caves, and with the vendors that are going to be associated around it. Then the bringing visibility to the idea, the concept of a CDA passport, where you saw so many kids just walking through the city council chambers. What if every one of these different schools had a passport where they would go to these different areas and try out something new? Or one of the, we've been talking to people, one of the successes of PubPass that has some concept like this is they brought people from the suburbs in, a particular demographic to participate in their network. So how do we bring people from outside the city to come into the city? And by creating this, the partnership with Visit St. Paul that brought the these visible integration is critical. And then we have to start branding this concept of the cultural destination areas so that it's visible and connected. So there was some $30,000 allocated towards marketing and brand building. And then, as you mentioned to you about an in-progress, just the act of coming, we have biweekly meetings that this collaborative meet. To spend that time on the meeting is tough when someone, if it's a single member, or to organize an event, a placemaking event. So we are proposing that we would have these capacity building mini grants up to $3,000 that we could, it would be an RFP of people, just very much like LISC has done that too, where they offer small amounts of money for events. But this would help the partners and the people creating events around these destination areas to start building up that concept. And then $5,000 for organizational development that would help us as we work with the different partners. So those are the different elements that we're proposing.
Thank you. Just looking back at the CDA vision and strategies that was shared with us during the budgeting process last year, and I'm sure it's a bit of a work in progress, as you mentioned, but I'm wondering, we talked at that time about quarterly cultural markets in the neighborhoods and also about a wealth-building pilot. Can you explain how, if those things are still part of the picture, and how they fit into these, because I'm not seeing them explicitly here, and then also just how much of the of this amount has already gone out the door versus how much is still remaining for the rest of the year?
Thank you. So the vision is still there. It's how do we get there, given the capacity of the organizations we're dealing with, right? So just to put on the food truck initiative requires a tremendous amount of coordinated to, as we move into the downtown retail concept, is going to require. So what we are doing is building pieces of it, having that same vision that would emerge. Some concept of the retail concept would emerge with the downtown cultural star, the next slide I'm going to be sharing with. The point is that it's still there, but given the capacity as we on the field and seeing what people can do, we think we need to build up capacity to move towards those goals around wealth building. Many of the organizations, maybe two or three, might have the capacity to do business loans and economic development. And so this wealth building component, we would work on a parallel track that would connect some of our city institutional work that we're doing. So I think to answer your question, in terms of quarterly markets, we would still have something like that going on, for example, with as Springboard for the Arts starts building their capacity to the back. That would be an opportunity where we'll start launching that effort. And your second question was?
Just how much of the budget is already spent?
So far, $10,000 to Visit St. Paul has been committed to them in order to meet their timelines to get this done. But all of this is subject to the process now, and that's why I wanted to bring it to the council to say, here's how we are planning to move forward. Again, it took this conversation with the community to also understand their thinking and their history of experience with the city and how. So we've been having a lot of that kind of dialogue that's happening and realize that the priorities need to be in this direction right now as we build up the capacity for the next phase.
And I just, I underscore the thinking here is it the businesses and our nonprofits that have higher capacity also have higher capacity to get loans from banks, to get people to invest in them. I mean, so like I think thinking a little smaller in terms of the capacity building and getting resources available to the smaller groups is it is part of building, and I am really glad that we're doing that because I know, you know, there's all sorts of small, really micro businesses in some of the areas I represent that they don't have the capacity to give up an hour or two for a meeting right now as they're getting started. They don't have the infrastructure to do some of that paperwork that's required in some of our other programs. So I think that we're getting into an area that we haven't gotten into in the past, and I think it's really important. And then I also kind of a non sequitur, but you mentioned PubPass.
Yeah.
And I want to, are you in relationship with the owner of PubPass?
I met with him to learn of his model.
Okay.
And the costs involved, because he can run a pretty budget.
That's all I want to know, because he's a Ward 3 resident, and it's the model has been incredibly successful. So it's as long as you're connected.
And the little booklet, I mean, he has a template already in place and an infrastructure in place to be able to translate it very quickly into something within our budget. So we've been having that conversation.
Great. Mr. Tao has a question.
Thank you. Dr. Corey, I'm just curious what, because this is a really important program, what do you have in place for terms of, you know, measuring your success and what is your reporting mechanism so that, you know, this program doesn't just become another system, right?
Yeah. You mean, Council Member Tao, you mean how do we institutionalize the program such that it's sustaining, right?
Or yes, but also how do we make sure that we hold ourselves accountable to deliver what we intend to deliver? And then part of the collaborators, how are they reporting their outcomes and to you all?
Thank you. So that's a good question, and this is a design build still. Right now, these diverse groups have not necessarily come together with each other to talk much. And so just the convening is the first stage, and we've had a few months of really good, honest conversations that have broken a barrier and building of trust. And so now we don't want from the city to dictate what the community and the group wants to do. So now we are helping facilitating a space where they, in these committees, like one group is dealing with organizational structure. How do we make decisions? How do we make sure that we are accountable? How do we make sure that the process is open, right? Another group is focusing on the particular sectors that are doing it. So I would say in the next few months are very critical, especially during the summer months as these pieces come into place, so that the goal would be that this group out there would be on its self-sustaining autonomous group that be able to make decisions. And we encourage them to the values that we are bringing to the table as we engage with them, and that is being open, having processes that include everybody, and have making sure that we have some of this accountability mechanism. Within PED and the city, we have this internal team that's meeting now on a regular schedule to exchange notes, connect, make sure that everybody is on the same page, plan, engage, react to situations. So those two mechanisms are what is evolving, and in the next few months should shape in more concrete ways.
And just a time check-in, it's about 10 to 11, so I want to make sure that we're wrapping up in 10, 15 minutes.
The next item that was in the budget was the Downtown Cultural Star. And the budget process allocated $100,000 to the Downtown Cultural Star. And again, we had this process of engaging with the community to find out how could we bring the vitality of the music and art into the downtown to make the downtown alive. And on what conditions of relationships? The community wants to make sure that they are not a cosmetic player in the downtown, but an active participant. So that concept of active leadership in the downtown events. At the same time, there are so many opportunities to bring in new markets into the downtown. People who might not necessarily have come to the downtown for an event could now engage in it. So after much deliberation, we reached the conclusion, and some of it in timing is we had to adjust our schedule, is that in this next round of the Cultural Star, we are proposing to the Cultural Star Board that we would have two RFPs, one get the capacity for someone to manage a downtown retail program and all the elements that might happen, whether it's in a particular location, whether it's in a diverse location like the farmers market. And so we're allocating part of that money for that. And then the other would be for a producer of downtown events that could place artists from the neighborhoods into the Black Dog Cafe, into the different venues. And so we can speed up that process, but we would follow the process of the Cultural Star of approving these two proposals. And then Neighborhood Star has just been completed, and we have looking at the proposals that are submitted from the community, and those decisions are going to be forwarded soon. And so next step is to actively take the model to the communities. To a lot of people don't know much about the cultural destination areas, but to convene in different destination areas, here's what we're doing, here's how you could be involved, and here are some next steps, and then drilling down to make sure that by the end of the summer, we'll begin to see some very strong concepts emerge. That when you see that map and you go to the place, you'll find that destination. So I want to appreciate your support and encouragement along the way. We've made tremendous progress in terms of where we are right now, and now it is digging deeper and making sure some of these things really crystallize.
And thank you. And in terms of process, it's really helpful for us to understand where you are today in June as budgets are being developed. And we know that after the mayor presents the budget to us in August, that we'll hear back from the PED. So that will be another opportunity to check in and see what progress is being made and how this looks to reflect in the 2020 budget. So I think, again, for us to hear how things are developing along the way and what's your vision behind them is very helpful. So this has been very helpful and interesting for me.
I want to leave a vision. If you look at the Green Line coming in from 280 and you have the Creative Enterprise Zone, and by the Capitol you have the Springboard for the Arts, and then in the middle you have a lot of these concepts and extending to the east side and the west, St. Paul is ready to explode with this energy of art and culture and destination that can also transform big developments also, like you've seen the buildings on University Avenue. And so we are unleashing a very unique model, as well as a model with the potential to bring in the neighborhoods, bring in the communities around them to share with economic development. So thank you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Corey.
And thanks once again to my team here.
Yeah, thanks for bringing them in. It was nice when you kind of did a roll call and people were waving back there. Next time we'll build a pyramid. It's fun. It's always fun. All right, thanks so much. We will shift gears radically now and turn things over to Chief Budget Officer Holly Houston. Welcome.
Thank you, Council President Brenmo, council members. Let me pull up the presentation. And so the Office of Financial Services was not able to join us this morning, so I'm going to be presenting on their behalf of the 2020 budget kickoff items that they presented to the departments in April and talk about some new things in the mayor's budget process this year, then we'll get into the City Council 2020 budget process and have an opportunity to discuss if there's any changes or recommendations or thoughts about how the council budget process runs this year.
And I think before you get started, my colleagues, I believe people were generally pretty happy with our approach to budget last year and the results that we got working in more on the front end of the budget with the mayor's office. I think I remember after the budget presentation or the budget address, we were all like, wow. Our stuff's in there. So yeah. This approach is helpful, and I think even getting a little bit of a deeper understanding of what the mayor's office is looking at will continue us working on that approach. So thank you for digging into this, and I think to my colleagues for willingness to do things a little bit differently. It seems like it's working out well.
Okay. So each year as OFS begins to build the base budget for the year, they take a look at revenue and expenses in the general fund. And so here's a slide that represents the general fund revenue, and as you can see, 63% of it is property taxes and LGA. And these two sources of revenue don't automatically grow, so property taxes only increases if the mayor or city council increase the levy, and LGA grows based on legislative action. And so happy to report this year that the legislature did increase the LGA, so for the city of St. Paul, we will be receiving just about $4 million more than this year. We anticipated a slight increase, so we anticipated $200,000, so it's a $3.8 million increase. However, we're not receiving state pension or public safety pension aid. That sunsetted and it was not renewed, so that's $500,000 cost to the revenue line. So overall, about $3.2 million to the good, which is just over 2% of our general fund levy or revenue.
All right. Ms. Naker has a question.
Just informational, if it takes a lot of time to look it up, no worries. But can you remind us what the total amount of LGA is that we then would be receiving in 2020?
It's roughly $69 million. Okay. So 65 this year, 69 next year.
Great.
Then next, they take a look at expenses. And so the issue with the budget is that expenses always increase and revenue doesn't increase unless there's action made. So 3/4 of the city's budget, general fund budget, is salaries and benefits. And so with contracts, salary contracts, and health benefits, it automatically increases each year. To take a look at the general fund growth over the last 5 years, on average, it's increased between 1% to 6%. You'll notice that 2018 was larger because of the right-of-way shift. If that wasn't included, it'd be 4.5%. And again, this growth is driven by spending needs that are paired with revenue that doesn't automatically increase. So that brings us to what was the starting gap for 2020 before. I'll get it all out there. Okay. What was the starting gap before departments started to work on their budget proposals for the mayor? And so it was $17.1 million budget gap this year. To put that into context, in 2019, the budget gap was 14.6. In 2018, it was 13 million. In 2017, it was 11. So it incrementally grows a little each year. Driving that gap, 3.7% was from personnel tails in 2017. So there was merit increases were half of the year in 2019. They'll be in the budget for the full year in 2020. And then the salary negotiations were completed last fall, and so salary increases is 8.8. That also includes any health benefit growth. This year we have an extra day with the leap year of salary costs, so that's just under $1 million.
Just amazing.
I know, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Got to account for it. Yeah. And then inflation is 1.5%, so contracts that may increase. Debt, 1.1%, and other planned increases is 1.1%. And then just on a side note, there was some news last week on a court ruling, and so organized trash collections isn't included any gaps or budgets, and it's not anticipated that the service will change. the way it's paid for might, but that is a big unknown right now, and I think we're all aware of the steps the city's taking, and that we'll learn more as the city. And
I know that you have some of those, like some rough numbers off the top of your head, though, because we talked about this yesterday. We're looking at a $17 million gap, and that's not including the LGA money that we have or whatever. But do you recall what the numbers were for the second half of 2019 and what they would be for 2020 if the trash hauling expenses went to general fund?
Based on the estimate that the annual collection program costs $26 million, if it stopped at June of this year, there would be 6 months in 2019 and a full year in 2020. So that total would be $39 million, and that would be a 25% levy increase.
On its own?
On its own.
Okay. Ms. Naker.
Thank you. Ms. Houston, can you speak a little bit to what the increase in debt is coming from? I assume this is 1.1 on top of what we normally allocate for debt service, right?
My guess is that, or I will confirm with the Treasury Office, but the way debt flows and cash flows changes each year, and so my understanding is that the cash flow is increasing. So just how the payment schedules are built out, I think it's just representing the debt increases for our current payment schedules.
And that doesn't take into account any potential refunding that we might do?
No, it does not. Yep.
Okay. Okay, so you would follow up on that to be sure?
Yes.
Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Ms. Nelson.
This might be like a later follow-up, but I'm just looking at this pie chart of the places where the revenue comes from. Is there like a breakdown within the property taxes slice of the pie of like how much of those property taxes are commercial, how much are residential, how much are industrial, and could we get that at some point too? Would be helpful just to have in my brain.
Sure, I can get. I'll follow up with
okay.
that.
Okay, thank you.
And that information is great to have. And there's also I think Chris Samuels from Ramsey County usually kicks off our budget process, and we might have him a little earlier this year. But another presentation that he's done involves fiscal disparities and talks about what properties are the most costly to serve and versus the ones that generate the most revenue. And it's a very interesting mapping. So I think as people are each time I go through the budget, I learn something new. And that was when the fiscal disparities presentation came through. It was incredibly interesting and to look at how where the taxes come from and also what costs the city money. I think, for example, retail is really expensive for cities because of police calls.
Interesting.
But I think that both of those would be good. The more presentation we can get from Mr. Samuels, the better. He's incredibly informative.
I agree, yes. Okay, now I'm just going to switch quickly and go over the mayor's budget process. This is a timeline. Right now, currently, the departments have submitted their budgets to the mayor, and they will be meeting over the next few months. The mayor will propose his budget to the council in mid-August, and then in a few slides, I'll focus on the council budget process. And then I just wanted to mention, new this year, the mayor asked for four different types of budget proposals when the departments are presenting to him. So department-specific budget asks, so these are the normal, what changes or additions do you want to add to your budget. He's also looking for select department initiatives, so like affordable housing, and singling those out and focusing more on them holistically. He's also asked for broad scope city initiatives with a 2020 budget ask. So bringing cross-department people together to talk about things like unsheltered and homelessness. How does the city have a budget to focus on that initiative? And then also just forward-thinking broad scope city initiatives with no budget at this time. So it might be something that is in the works and may have a budget impact later, but it's not on this current 2020 timeline.
Ms. Nanker.
Thank you. So to be clear, Ms. Houston, we'd be seeing departments coming to us to present, and they potentially have their budgets organized into some of these categories? Is that, and these are new categories that they haven't been asked to put things in before?
I think that's something that I need to understand better. I think the department presentations will be very similar. I think the question for the council is, do we want to make sure that these city initiatives come mm-hmm. as a group and present to the city council? I think that needs to be fleshed out, but something I just wanted to make aware as something, some work that's going on and a possible option that maybe we have, maybe we format the presentations differently.
Yeah, and this is just like an example of the, I think the mayor's willingness to be transparent with us about what he's asking the departments to present.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, obviously we'll get the budget with these, with this, the, what he wants us to see in the budget. But I think the ability to look at how their information is coming in does certainly help us in terms of what questions we want to ask and how we want to shape our budget hearings.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that, Ms. Nanker.
And I would just say that it would be, I think we've been talking for a while about the way that our budget doesn't really reflect the way we think about how we spend our money, because we break things down into our funds and categories that it's hard to roll up into. How much do we spend on recreation? How much do we spend on streets? So I love the idea of having things broken into broad scope city initiatives and formatting our hearings so that we're hearing about those all together.
I agree. Okay, and then just to solve for the budget gap, the mayor's asked departments to look for savings by finding different efficiencies within the department, to look at cross-department collaboration to potentially save money, and then he's also asked for budget reduction scenarios at a $1, $3, and $6 million level. And so as the mayor and as the departments present to the mayor, we'll find out in August what he's recommending at that point. So I'm going to jump into the city council budget process.
And I just a reminder to folks, I think, who may not have been in, Ms. Houston is presenting the mayor's piece of this on behalf of John McCarthy. So I appreciate your willingness to step in and do that for him. If we have questions and we want to direct them to Holly for follow-up, we can. But I do recognize that you are stepping in for the mayor's office on this part. And then the second piece is what we've been working on for 2020.
Okay, and so you're all familiar with this, but the mayor will propose his budget in mid-August. The city council has been meeting with general fund departments from mid-August through September. On or before September 17th, the city council, or the, I'm saying the wrong one, the HRA will set the levy limit. And then on or before October 1st, the city will set the levy limit.
Can we pause there?
Yep.
So we're talking about maybe doing some change of language, and instead of saying setting the max levy, to say setting the levy limit. Because I feel like when we say we're setting the max levy, I just get this image of full throttling the boat and setting it at the max. And instead of really setting what our top limit is, because last year we were able to work down from the limit that we set. And I think it just sends a better message from us that we're putting the absolute top limit as opposed to we're putting it to the max. And so we're talking about a few language changes just to that I think better reflects what the work that we're really doing. We're just putting a limit on. So if you strongly object and really want to say max levy, then, you know, we can talk about it. But we're trying it out for size. You say you're in?
I said this is less fun now, but I was just kidding.
So Holly's trying it on for size. We'll see how
right.
It goes.
I stumbled a little. I'll work
on that. No, it sounds good.
And then after the levy limits are set, we still have the opportunity to meet with departments from October to December and see if there's any adjustments that need to be made to the budget. Just mid-November, notices of proposed property tax statements are mailed out. And then the City Council Truth and Taxation meeting is traditionally the first week in December. And then the final budget adoption needs to be either the 4th or the 11th this year.
And before you move on, that's the other I thought the Truth and Taxation hearing was the absolute worst day of 2018. And just because I think there was a kind of a miss between what we were doing and what people organized to come and say. And so we're also looking at how do we, I don't want to say rebrand, but how do we frame that? I mean, truth and taxation, which is called TNT, by in kind of like outside speak, the TNT, which is what it felt like. If there's a different way to present that so people know there, it's really not a public hearing on our budget in the first week of December. I mean, by that point, we're so far into the process. But the hearing has to come out, or that has to happen after the property tax notices are sent, so there is a timing piece of it. So I think if we can figure out a way to present that that's more in alignment with what we're actually doing there. There's other things where we'd like to work on engaging people earlier on in the budget process so they don't feel like that's their opportunity to weigh in. Mm-hmm. So kind of a combination of those things, but keep that in mind, and if you have an idea on how we can frame that better for public understanding and so that it's a meaningful, I mean, I guess I personally don't know. It's an obligation. It's something that we have to do, and I don't know if I would do it that way if we didn't have to, but we do. But it is also awfully late in the budget process to influence change. So, Ms. Nanker.
Thank you. I really appreciate that point, and I think it would go a long way to have something earlier where it was really clear this is the public hearing on the budget. I know we got that feedback a little bit last year. Have you thought, or Ms. Houston, have you discussed yet where exactly that might be in the process? Some sort of like general budget public discussion?
It almost seems like it should we talked about this last year, but after the mayor presents his budget, to have sort of a council response, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe it's a council response and hearing. Mm-hmm. But that would be something that maybe in August, not long after the budget address, or maybe right in the beginning of September.
Yeah.
But when we kind of know where the beginning is, and hopefully that would deflect some at the end. Ms. Prince and then Ms. Nelson.
I agree with that timing. I think having some kind of a public hearing after we hear from the mayor and when we are shaping some of our priorities. And also I think it makes sense before we set the levy because people then really feel like we're listening to them before we've made decisions that we can't change.
And there's a window, isn't there? It's pretty – yeah, I think so too. I think that then and again, I think at those conversations talking about like being heard and getting everything you ask for are not the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so it's a good opportunity for people to share their thoughts on the budget and also recognize that we're – you know, tee up the process that we're going into and what the challenges are as well. I think it's a great idea, and I'm very supportive. I just think language matters and timing matters. And again, last year's Truth and Taxation was – too much. Ms. Nelson.
The other thing I'm thinking about, and I'm reflecting back to, like, getting sworn in on September 5th and at 9 a.m. getting sworn in and at 10 a.m. like going immediately to a budget hearing is literally what happened. And I sort of like, I was brand new. I was literally just like, okay, I remember because I saw you in the hallway and we were having a party and you were like, we have to go to work now, Mitra. So, I remember just like sitting in the hearing and it was all coming at me and I was a brand new council member trying to make sense of it. And I'm like, I'm sort of loving going through my first full cycle this time because I have something to go off of, but I was also like dropped into the middle of the movie last time. And one thing I've been thinking about is we received so much information from departments in that whole series of presentations, and there was like a lot that was presented that I don't know if and how we can better like advertise to the community how to tune in or like look at the presentations that are posted or something, because I asked the questions that I felt like I could ask to the best of my ability at the time. And when my constituents reach out to me and say, hey, I saw that you'll be discussing this, I can't be there in person, but I'd really love to know more about XYZ, it helps us as council members follow up and just like get more information and like facilitate better. And so that's something I've just been thinking about that, like as we go through the natural process of digesting like every single presentation, I know that it's a lot to ask of our community to like come to daytime meetings and sit through them too. And maybe if they're like me, it'll still feel not mind-numbing if the first time you don't even know what you're looking at. But our job is to like translate this process for the public. And so I've just been thinking about how can we like open those up more to just like make people more aware of them, help make sense of it, share the materials better. I just think that will also help us not get to a point where we're in like December and then folks are wanting to have like a lot more say that we just like ran the clock out. We ran out of time. So those are my thoughts, and I'm still thinking about it as I go through my first round. But
and I do think that, I mean, one of the reasons why, there obviously this last year there was some external organizing, but I think we all experienced that most people are engaged after they get a bill. And so the truth in taxation is, I think it's designed specifically to so people can react with frustration about their tax bill. So I think kind of turning that on its ear, it's same as we did with our budget with the council. It's like, let's do this on the front end so that when we get to the end, there's just no excuses. And I do think that we have a role and a job to translate this information, to open it up to the public, and also public needs to understand that it is complicated and that it might take a while for it all to sink in, because it's a lot. Like I said, I'm still learning something new every year with the budget. With our bonding presentation that we had a few months ago was incredibly interesting, and I just don't think you can take all of that in at one time. So it also takes time, and we can bring in experts that can help us along the way. But I agree, we're in the process of morphing with language and with timing and with response time. So, Ms. Naker and then Ms. Prince.
Thank you. As I was listening to Councilmember Nelson speak, I had an idea, and I preface this by saying it might be a weird idea, and it's always dangerous to come up with an idea and immediately say it in public. But what if I've been really impressed with how I agree about the translation of the budget and simplifying something that is very complicated while making sure people know it's complicated. Our media services team, I have been very impressed with, for example, with our Open for Business, our Business Awards video, and I wonder if they could, I mean, no one's going to sit there and watch the whole video. Very few people are going to sit there and watch the whole video afterwards of our actual council meeting presentation, but maybe they could be engaged to create some sort of like quick synopsis of each of the department's presentations and kind of show the highlights and just... And it would be something we could share, just the video without it having to be like the video.
And kind of like we've talked about in GypTech, like a punchier short video that gets that's more engaging with people.
Yeah.
Well, they have the capacity. I mean, that would be a great thing for them to do. Ms. Prince?
Well, last year I think we had most of our budget meetings in the council chamber.
Which also a change.
Yeah, I think that helps too, because if people do want to come down, there's plenty of room. Also, if people want to drill down into particular areas, they can watch the videos. I mean, in this setting, listening to a recording is a lot harder than... So I think continuing to do that would be a good idea. But I do like the idea of the video as well.
And thank you, sir. I'm mindful of time. And to add on to it, the thing I think about is how there's the community engagement events series the mayor does that sort of teaches the concept of how to build the budget. And then there's opening up our org committee hearings. But the step that the community talked about last time at that Truth in Taxation hearing was, how do we get to like react to what the proposals are? And I just think that's a whole, that might be like a new step where we, like the chance to give a feedback and then have it change again, like that piece wasn't as there. And I think one of the things we could do, I'm still new, so I'm figuring out what all the steps are. But if people can be more engaged on the front end, it's just like shaping what they want in there. There's ideally like less last minute wanting different things, or like there's just like more built in, more up front. So figuring this out is something I've just been thinking about a lot, and I appreciate all the ideas here. I'm glad that people are also willing to help make more people access this.
I'd like to add the unpopular flip side of that, and that is I sometimes feel like the public, we need to remember that the public hearing is one way to reach your council members. Mm-hmm. You can send an email, you can make a phone call. Many of us offer community office hours where people can walk in. We're in our offices and we can meet, and those are actually other great ways of shaping policy and mm-hmm. getting involved on the early end as well. So I think we need to encourage people self-publish in a way that they never could have in the past with their social media accounts. And so it's like the podium or the public hearing is a place to like take a stand and make a production. And I really do want to work on how do we do the work with people. You're the one who always talks about that politics, your gymnasium quote is really good, and I forgot.
Democracy is a gym membership, not a vending machine, and you kind of like get out of it what you put into it. But people sometimes think I put in my quarter and I want my Reese's Pieces, and like, where is my Reese's Pieces? And they shake the vending machine, and it's like, well, you're shaking a gym. Like, Reese's Pieces isn't going to fall out. You actually have to get in there. So I think, yeah, I think that's a good concept to apply to this process.
Combination. Too. I mean, it's all of the above. So getting people engaged and then also doing the work. Great. Sorry, Holly.
No.
We just had a little chat.
It flows nicely. So the next slide and the final slide is really just as I start to fill in the calendar and create the documentation and materials for the departments for the City Council budget process, there are certain decision and process points. And so I just had listed a few here that this would be the opportunity to provide feedback, which has already started. So I've been writing those down. But the last few years, we've had a PowerPoint template that's similar to the mayor's with some council slides. And so just wondering if there's any interest in adding slides or removing slides. I think that that template has worked well, but I'm also open to any feedback that you have. Do you need to see it or no? Yes.
Okay. Are we making this decision right
well,
now?
I guess I would also just say that if you...
I can send it out, too.
Yeah, and you'll note, Holly sends us a lot of information by email, and it is incumbent upon all of us to be read the information that is sent. If you would like the information delivered to your office in a different way, like by in-person meetings, by printed materials plopped on your chair,
by pigeon,
by whatever you want. I think, this budget, the way we do this is collaborative, and but it relies on people responding and engaging with Holly, who's doing the work right now. And so if there are particular things that we want to see, if they're strange and controversial, then Holly may bring them to the org committee meeting to see if we want a thumbs up or thumbs down. But most of it is just tweaks one way or the other. And I think that because we've done our budget process different, the budget presentations that are in September, October, and November have been less intense
mm-hmm.
Because we're having meetings with these departments all year round. Yeah. So in some ways, we've had less slides because we kind of know. We just heard from HR. We just heard from PED. So in some ways, it's kind of we've lightened up the back end of the budget process. So,
Okay. Then I can send out the materials and the proposal of what would be the budget process. Or, like you said, I'm willing to meet with any of you, but I'm also respectful of your time. So if there's a better way to communicate that you would like from me over the next through this budget process, just please let me know. I cannot do pigeons, but I can do anything else. So, I'll send out the template, any supplemental materials. As Council President Brenmoan just mentioned, the general fund departments have presented twice. I think that has worked well, and we'll continue with that format. I have asked all departments to submit the materials that we ask, and then we schedule any subsequent meetings if there's any changes that the council is interested in during the October-November timeframe. And then we've had the city departments present, but as I mentioned this year, we might want to be clued into any cross-department initiatives that we want to come before the council. And then, as Council President Brenmoan also mentioned, we can rethink the truth and taxation. Currently, it's been held at Wednesdays at 6:30 during the council meeting. It can start as early as 6 p.m. by law, and we could have a special meeting. There's a time frame. We have to have it after, I believe, July or November 28th, but we could have it a different date, too.
We talked about maybe moving it to a different format or a different location, maybe even just downstairs, like down in the big room or something, or... but having it so it doesn't feel like it's a council meeting, but rather, mm-hmm. and again, it's something that we're required to do by a state statute, and I have a feeling it wasn't Dems that put it in there. So,
and we can
Bill Cranky.
What?
Bill Cranky.
Cranky. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. I think especially if we accomplish what we want to accomplish in that perfunctory thing that we have to do at the end. I mean, for the first 6 years I was here, Truth and Taxation was basically three people that came to yell at us, and last year was used differently, and I want to respond to that by doing our process differently, but not by lifting up TNT, which I think is it's just awkward. So,
in the early years, we did it together.
Yes, I've heard that the school district and the Ramsey County and the city council all did it together. Maybe it should just be at GIPTAC, right?
At 10 a.m. on a Thursday.
10 a.m. on a Thursday. In any case, I think that we all appreciate the intent of letting folks, but being part of the budget process as opposed to reacting to your tax bill is a much different and more productive approach. So we're working on that. Okay. I'm glad people are okay with levy limits. Yes.
All right. Is there anything else right now?
And I would underscore just keeping apprised of the things that come across your desk with Holly and tapping into her with budget. She's on top of this, and it's just a lot of information. I know we have a bunch. We're all very busy this year, and so encourage you to do that because most of nothing's a surprise. Okay, and then I do want to say before we go to our just checking in on boards and commissions, and we're running out of time. One point of information and one question. So I asked Holly to print a copy of Peter Leggett's garbage background, current information, and FAQs. It's in everybody's inbox. You have it, but I think it came out late last night, so I wanted to make sure people had a chance to look at it. And I think it's pretty helpful because it talks about a timeline. It talks about what the mayor's press conference was last week. It has some good frequently asked questions. The city attorney's office asked if we wanted to have a closed-door session today to talk about the pending lawsuit, and I said that we probably would like to have a closed-door session, but not today. This last week, looking at today's schedule, there's just way too much on it. So that is something that will be in the hopper to talk about their appeal and what things are looking like and what the thoughts are behind it. But I think this, as far as I am aware, is what the city attorney's office is putting out and what the administration is putting out. And it should answer questions, top-line questions that we have about this and answer the questions that we're getting from residents. But that keep an eye out for a closed-door session to talk with the city attorney's office. We just couldn't squeeze it in today. So is there any important or meaningful updates on committees, boards, or other activities that council members would like to share?
I think the only thing would be the Gold Line Commission supported us on our request to get the bridge at the session this year. And that's kind of hairy, I think, that we still don't have bridge funding, and we're not sure how we're going to do it. So I just wanted to call people's attention to that because of the importance to replacing the Kellogg Bridge before the Gold Line starts construction, which is coming right up.
And next week we will be getting the state bonding priorities from the mayor's office as a presentation to the city council. I know that Tommy is trying to meet with all of the council members before she puts the list into Legistar, so nobody's surprised. But I'll ruin the surprise and tell you that it's the bridge. We'll see that, and then also things that we're supporting. It is very interesting to me that a bridge that was dumped on us by the state is not being funded for it repair, and that we have to kind of spend our bonding money on something that really I think that they have a responsibility to build, especially with Gold Line.
Especially with Gold Line.
And maybe, you know, it could be a priority for us to work on how do we build that coalition, because she describes it as a really big ask for St. Paul, and it just enrages me. It feels like it shouldn't be an ask from St. Paul.
Who describes it that way, Tommy?
Yeah, just the number. Yeah. The number of almost $50 million.
Yeah.
And the bonding bill, I feel like 50 is kind of chump change, especially for a big city like ours. But it shouldn't be even part of the bonding money. It's transportation, and it's part of Green Gold Line. So in any case,
just fully fund LGA, and we'll do more than that.
Yeah. Right. So beware of Trojan horses from MnDOT, because one of the first things I found out when I was trying to do traffic calming on MnDOT was meeting with MnDOT and having them say, you want it? We'll give you MnDOT. Yeah. We don't want it. Yeah. I will give you E7th. And so I think that's what happened in 82 that resulted in our taking the bridge. Like, why would we do it?
I think we should never take anything.
Ever. No.
Without lots of caveats. Okay, that's a good heads up. And we'll hear, I think it's a good opportunity also to say, to talk about that at the council meeting on the 12th.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the public meeting. Other updates? Boards and commissions? I will say that Rushline is rocking and rolling, and they're working on station area plans, and it's a really exciting project for the east side and down into downtown. We had some adjustments with the Pedro stops, and so conversation about that. Yep, Ms. Nelson.
I can just speak on the Port Authority side, serving as a commissioner. At the last board meeting, we voted to create an industrial development district, which simply is a statutory step the port has to take if they're interested in moving forward on helping do cleanup at the Hillcrest Golf Course site. There's so many other conversations down the road that have to take place to figure out if and how to shape that, but it's like a way to say there's formal interest because we'd have to take this step by law in order to keep any of the talks going. So it's something I asked a lot of questions about at the table at the Port Authority because I've never gone through the process of creating an industrial development district. It has a weird name that makes it seem like it's more of a thing than it actually is, but I learned a lot through that, and I'm happy to answer people's questions about it. But Councilmember Tao and I serve on that, so just wanted to give that brief update there.
Mr. Tao?
Just to add on that, the Port Authority will be presenting an update next week, so that might be part of the update. So.
It ought to be part of the update, lest they think it shouldn't.
It shan't.
Okay, Mr. Tao.
Thank you, Council President. So on the St. Paul Promise neighborhood, we all know that Monier, the ED, left the position to work in the administration, and so we are in the process of finding a replacement. We did our first session on figuring out the values, who we want, and it came down to somebody like President Barack Obama, but I don't know if we can get him.
What's he doing?
We're in process. I'll update you all later.
Cool.
Thank you.
I think we won by getting Monier here, but
yeah.
Great. Any other updates? Wonderful. Well, we have plenty of meetings today. We will be adjourned for now.